Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Still reeling, in a good way, after the Supreme Court ruling on Friday that, lo and behold, gay men, lesbian women, bisexuals all have equal rights under the law to marry the person they choose. Any two consenting adults, unrelated, can get married. And good for America, for it. It's still amazing to some, and I guess still to me, although I did predict this if you've heard me talk about it before. It was more than the ruling. There was something just wonderful. Friday night, the White House bathed in the glow of the rainbow colors, thousands of people out celebrating in front of the White House, lots of people who thought the day would never come. As I described to you yesterday, there were some of us who fought back against those who believed the day would never come, including people in our own community. I'm gay, but it was people in the gay community that were my biggest opponents in the early years of marriage equality. We had to convince our community first. And it wasn't so much that gay and lesbian leaders didn't want marriage equality. It's they didn't believe it was possible. And so they actively pushed down those of us that did, lest we make the community look bad. Now, this is a perennial thing you hear in civil rights battles. Booker T. Washington opposed the more radical civil rights activists in the African-American community who believed in full equality because he didn't want to upset the white man. There are women that pushed away those feminists who believed in full gender equality because they didn't want to upset the men. And I'm sorry to say there were gay and lesbian leaders who pushed away activists like myself because they didn't want to upset the straight community. I'm proud to say in all three battles, true equality finally won. But the story has to be told because when people say, Mark, you're never going to be able to get reasonable gun regulation. You're never going to be able to get Medicaid expansion so that poor people can get health care. Mark, you're never going to be able to do anything to stop global warming. Mark, clean the Potomac River. You're dreaming. I say, if you will it, it is no dream. It's a quote from Theodore Herzl. Or the best one I would quote is Margaret Mead, who said, never doubt that a small group of committed people can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. In the spirit of Margaret Mead, I want to continue the story that I began yesterday. If you heard me yesterday, you know the details. If not, I'll bring you quickly up to date. I talked about the fact that I started this fight in 1998, that we were opposing a proposition, not Prop 8 in California. No, that one got more press. We started against Prop 22. That those opposing the attack on gay people didn't want to show real gay people in media ads because they thought that would be too explosive, that I quit the no on Prop 22 committee when they refused to show real gay and lesbian people's lives, that I and a few others started the Valentine's Day protests, starting civil disobedience, gathering up dozens of gay couples to try to get married. Protests that became a movement as Valentine's Day protests spread across California and then across the country. I and another California lawyer drafted the first marriage equality law in the nation. I described it in detail yesterday. Full equality at the state and federal level for gay couples. Was told by a lesbian assemblywoman that marriage equality was impossible. Got a straight guy elected who promised to introduce the bill, and he introduced the bill. And now it's 2001. And the guy who I worked so hard for, who honorably promised that he would introduce this bill and did, First-time legislator, Paul Koretz, and it's interesting because I'm about to be a first-time state legislator myself, so I can imagine the pressure he felt, gave me a call and was despondent. He was really upset. Mark, oh my God, Mark, I have to pull the bill. What? I said, what? Almost dropped the phone. This was an honorable man. He made me an honorable promise, and he introduced the first bill in the nation to give full marriage equality to gay and lesbian couples. Why would he pull that bill? Why would he deintroduce it? Why would he remove it himself? I thought it'd be voted down, but why would he not try to fight? He promised me he would. He told me the Lambda Legal Defense Fund, the leading gay rights organization, the equivalent of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund for African American people, had insisted that he pull the bill. Why? I asked. I was still in shock. He said, well, Lambda has another bill, a bill that would give hospital visitation to gay and lesbian couples. I said, okay, introduce that too. That bill gives hospital visitation. Hospital visitation is a good thing. My bill gives 2,000 rights and freedoms and privileges of marriage. Everything from in taxes and Social Security to being able to take care of children, adopt them, to being able to take care of each other when we're sick. It included hospital visitation. It included the full panoply of marital rights. Fine, introduce their bill. Introduce mine too. Theirs will pass, mine won't, but mine will be the standard. And every year we'll get more and more votes until mine will finally pass. Paul said, no, 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 you don't understand. They insist that your bill be pulled. I said, Paul, you can introduce more than one bill. He said, Mark, I know. I think it's ridiculous. If you can convince them to let the bill stand, I'm okay with it. But they're insisting I pull it. I represent West Hollywood. It's a large, leading, heavily gay area. And I can't have all the leading gay rights organizations oppose me on this. Already the gay legislators oppose this. They think it looks bad that I, a straight legislator, introduced the bill. I said, Paul, I offered the bill to them first. He said, I know. I said, then co-introduce it with them. He said, nope, they're against it. I said, Paul, what's going on here? Please explain it to me, because I'm at a loss. I'm at a loss. It'd be like hearing that Martin Luther King opposed black equality. I didn't get it. Why would our leaders? I know why the bigots oppose marriage equality. Why would our leaders oppose it? He said, Mark, I'll let you in on a little secret. It's called an NIH. Not invented here. What that means is that political organizations may start because of a good cause, but they often try to continue themselves through email lists, through money, financing, and so forth, and they can only do it if they can give credit to themselves. Nobody's going to give money to the Lambda Legal Defense Fund. No gay and lesbian people will give them any cash if they know that just some couple lawyers in California drafted the bill themselves. People are going to think, well, why do we need Lambda? To be fair to Paul, I'm not sure he used all these words to me. This was a conversation that took place 14 years ago. This may have been what Jim Toledano, the fellow lawyer that I was writing the bill with, said to me. But Paul Koretz made it clear that the fact that I had drafted the bill rather than Lambda was definitely not in the bill's favor. So I said, Paul, give them the credit. Wash my hands of it. Don't tell anyone I wrote it. He said, if you can convince them, Mark, you know I support the bill. You know I support full equality. You know I support you. You know I thank you for helping to get me elected. If you can convince Lambda, by all means, let's keep the bill. So I gave a call to the Lambda Legal Defense Fund. And you know what? I'm going to say your name on air. It's not libelous if it's the truth, because she's still at Lambda, and I'm sure she supports legal equality. Her name is Jenny Fizer. P-F-I-Z-E-R. And Jenny, if you ever hear this, I invite you to come on the show and explain to me why we had one of the most angry conversations I've ever had. I called Jenny Fizer of the Lambda Legal Defense Fund, and she told me they were going to pull the bill. And first I reminded her that it was Paul Koretz that had the power. Well, they were going to pushed Paul to do the bill. They had a bill on hospital visitation. My bill shouldn't be competing with their bill. I said, Jenny, my bill helps your bill. If you show people full marriage equality, 2,000 rights to gay and lesbian couples, and you will show them your bill, which offers 6, that will increase support for your bill. That way they can say, well, we gave them hospital visitation. We're not going to give them full marriage. It helps you. Good cop, bad cop. Or if you will, in another example, the ACT UP AIDS activists versus the more tame activists, or Booker T. Washington versus Martin Luther King, or for that matter, Martin Luther King versus Malcolm X. I can give you a number of examples where putting forward radical equality actually helps move toward that path. And then I told her what I thought I'd learned from Paul. I said, Jenny, I know Lambda didn't draft this bill, but I'll make you a deal. You leave this bill alone, let it go through. I won't tell anyone I drafted it. I'll ask Jim to keep his voice quiet too. Lambda, you can take full credit. You can do fundraising appeals for it. You can get lots of money for it. Tell everyone you did it. It's my handiwork. Yeah, I worked several months on it to make it perfect. It's yours. My gift to you. No charge. This isn't about me. And it's not about you. It's about full equality under the law. And Jenny said something very revealing to me in that phone call. She said, Mark, too many people already know you've written the bill. She was right. I had told others. I didn't realize that was going to be a problem. But that to me implicitly suggested that she cared more about her organization than she cared about real gay and lesbian lives. And it was around that time I angrily slammed down the phone. You could do that in those days. It was cell phones. We actually had a real phone that you could slam down. I think that's the last time in my life I've angrily slammed down a phone. I was livid. I'm still angry about it. It's probably why I'm calling her out right now on air. And let that be a lesson to all of us. Whatever organization you're in, it's not just the conservatives, it's the liberals too. If you're in the Sierra Club, I know you care about the Sierra Club, and I'm not picking on the Sierra Club. I know of nothing they've done wrong. This is just an example. But you should care more about the environment than you do the Sierra Club. If you're in the NAACP, you should care more about African-American equality and economic benefits than you do about your own organization, the NAACP. If you're in the Democratic Party, you should care more about America and your values than you do about the Democratic Party. That doesn't mean we can't care about the Democratic Party, the NAACP, or the Sierra Club, or the Lambda Legal Defense Fund, but never forget the reason why organizations are formed. It should be for the cause, not for raising money, not for keeping your job. The goal is the cause. One of the proudest groups I ever worked with was the Service Members Legal Defense Fund. Their goal was to help gay and lesbian service members who were suffering under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And their ultimate goal was to end the policy. They knew that ending the policy would make them lose their jobs. There'd be no point to have a Service Members Legal Defense Fund once it was legal for gay and lesbian people to serve openly in the military. And yet they worked day in and day out for a cause that they knew would cost them their jobs. Those are the proper heroes. This is Mark Levine. I'll continue with my story of gay history that I personally lived through and how we got to the wonderful day of full marriage equality when we come back. If you want to call in, though, please do so. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let me know what you think. We'll be right back. Right after that. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine. I guess I'm still a little upset over what happened 15 years ago, but, well, I made my point. Soon after that, I left California. In fact, I left a little bit before in the middle of this, but stayed on it by telephone. Many of you know the rest of my story. I wrote the brief challenging the Florida electors in Bush v. Gore, and I then went to work for Barney Frank as his legislative counsel, Congressman Barney Frank. The issue of marriage equality obviously went on after that. We had Prop 8 in California. I wasn't there for that. Many people thought of that as the first real attack, not knowing about our earlier battles against Prop 22. And then living in the Washington, D.C. area, actually across the river in Alexandria, Virginia, I became heavily involved in making it happen in D.C. I knew that D.C. was the most liberal jurisdiction, the District of Columbia, in the area. I live, of course, near Virginia, near Maryland, and near D.C. But D.C. was a place I thought it could happen first. I helped organize what was called neighborhood committees to basically discuss in various neighborhoods. And, of course, I did it my way. I brought real gay and lesbian people out. And if I went to a neighborhood that was full mostly of elderly African-Americans, I made sure that I had elderly African-American gay and lesbian couples talking to their neighbors. It's important to show people that every culture, every group of people has gay and lesbian Americans. And I understand that we need to talk with each other, and that was one way to do it. We started to build up support across D.C., and then I talked with people in the D.C. City Council, and they said, you know, we're not going to do anything as long as Bush is president. With Bush as president, we just don't think, we think that anything we do will be overturned because, as you probably know, under the Constitution, Congress has full power over the District of Columbia and can overturn basically anything the District of Columbia does. And so they didn't feel safe while Bush was president. But once President Obama was elected and a Democratic Congress was elected, we felt the time was ripe to move forward in D.C. And I'm proud to say that I believe D.C. and New Hampshire, someone correct me if I'm wrong, were the first states in the country to have marriage equality by a legislature, by a council, by elected representatives instead of by courts. Anyway, I worked with D.C. The first draft that came out by one D.C. city councilman was not good. It actually would have required religious institutions to marry gay couples, and we've never, ever asked for that. Later on, if there's time, I'll play something from Sean Hannity where he suggests that's what we wanted. No, gay, lesbian activists never wanted to require churches and synagogues and mosques to marry gay people. They don't have to marry people outside their religion. Religious groups under the First Amendment can marry whomever they want. Our push was for civil marriage, for equality under the law. So I worked with another city councilman by the name of Phil Mendelson. He's now head of the council in D.C., and we worked together to craft the law exactly right that would protect gay and lesbian couples, allow them all the civil rights of marriage, but at the same time protect religious organizations' right to marry whomever they choose. We got this going forward. I testified on its behalf. You can still find my testimony, by the way. And if you can't find it sometime, leave me a note on Twitter at MarkLivingTalk. I'll send it to you. Testified on its behalf in committee and in before the entire council. I worked with the D.C. Attorney General. And I'm proud to say in December 2009, the D.C. marriage equality law that I crafted became law. It would go into effect in March of 2010. But there was one hurdle yet still to cross. It seems that you can have a referendum, an initiative on laws that have been passed, and a number of preachers in D.C. were determined to stop my law. I'll tell you what happened right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. In honor of Marriage Equality Day, last Friday, June 26th, I am giving my own detailed account of what I did in the marriage equality movement, which of course was a bunch of committed activists all over the country, indeed all over the globe. I was part of a cog in the machine, but an important one. I did some important things, and I'm proud of some of the things that I did and making things happen. And again, kudos to Margaret Mead, who reminds us that we should never doubt that a small group of committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. She probably said people, not citizens. Anyway, when we left off, I had just written the law that got passed by the D.C. City Council to give marriage equality to the District of Columbia. And I believe that that, and maybe New Hampshire's too, was the earliest legislative marriage equality. I had tried in California, remember, got shut down. I did succeed in D.C. But there was a problem because in D.C., there was a referendum process, which is normally a good thing. Democracy is a good thing. And it allows citizens to overrule the legislature. In D.C., of course, it's Washington, D.C. It's a little different from the states. It is a district. It doesn't have representation in Congress, for example. But its city council, in effect, is its legislature. It doesn't have a House and a Senate. They're the ones who pass laws for the District of Columbia. But the citizens of the District of Columbia can vote on laws. They get a number of petitions, and they sign enough people sign the petitions, and they can vote to overturn a law that their council made. And a number of preachers in D.C. and in Maryland got enough D.C. residents to sign. Now remember, this was still a pretty radical notion in 2009. President Obama at the time was still saying he supported traditional marriage. Now, for the record, we now know that President Obama is lying to us the whole time. I think gay people are quick to forgive. We kind of understood he was lying. He did it mostly to get elected. I'm not saying that we liked it or we condoned it, but at the time, he was still proclaiming that he was against same-sex marriage. And D.C., let's face it, is a majority African-American polity. 60% black, probably, more or less. And black folk were, and this was shown in the Prop 8 battle in California, black folk were less likely to support same-sex marriage than white folk. That's not true anymore, by the way. And that's due, I think, largely to people like President Obama, who've come out full square in support of our rights. He helped end that racial divide. Good for him. But at the time, he was on the wrong side of history, and so were most black people. And even though the D.C. City Council was majority black and was liberal, and probably due to the fact that any legislature, any city council knows a lot of gay people. In fact, D.C. apparently has the highest percentage of gay people of any of the 51 jurisdictions in the United States, higher than any of the states. 10% of people in Washington, D.C. are gay or lesbian. That's higher even than California. But so the council certainly knew of gay people. They were Democrats. They supported gay rights. The vote went down, I think, 14-2. Pretty good. But the ordinary people of D.C., particularly not the white people who work in politics so much, or the black people that work in politics so much, but a lot of the other people, longtime residents, most of whom are African American, go to church all the time, and we're hearing from their preachers, you know, they're opposed to same-sex marriage. So we were very concerned that the preachers were going to win a referendum to overturn our law. By the way, that happened. It happened in Maine. The Maine legislature passed the law, and the people voted to overturn it successfully. And then a few years later, the people voted again to allow it again. But it certainly was something that we feared, and particularly we feared because it's one of the earliest legislatively enacted marriage equality laws. If the people overturned it, it would look bad not just for D.C., but for the entire nation. It would make those of us that supported marriage equality all across America fearful and less likely to succeed. And pundits all across would say, see, the American people oppose it. Yeah, courts, renegade, crazy courts might give equal rights under the law, but ordinary people don't support this kind of thing. It would have, particularly since it came out of Washington, D.C., it would have resonated nationwide in a very negative way. We were very afraid we could lose that vote. I had, remember, just been through a loss at the ballot, Prop 22, and even Prop 8 in liberal California lost at the ballot. I was very concerned. So I did some research. I did some research on D.C. law. I am a lawyer, constitutional lawyer. And I discovered there was a provision in the D.C. Charter, which is the equivalent of a constitution for a state, that said you can't vote on civil rights. You can have a referendum if you don't like that D.C. spent its budget on this particular project. You can have a referendum if D.C. Has a certain policy on its way of handling the roads or its decisions on raising taxes. But you can't take a vote on civil rights. Interestingly, that provision was insisted on back in the 1970s by none other than Marion Barry, the man who would later rise to be mayor of D.C. and then fall after taking some crack, and then would later become a city councilman, who would be one of the two, ironically enough, to vote against our marriage equality law, the law that I wrote with Phil Mendelson that was passed in 2009. He opposed our bill. 14 supported it. He and another person opposed it. But his point in the charter was that you can't have a referendum on civil rights. So, is marriage equality a civil right? Damn right it is. I met with the D.C. Attorney General. He agreed. I met with D.C. public officials, the mayor's office. They agreed it was a civil right. And when they tried that referendum, I took them to court. I represented the Gertrude Stein Democratic Club, the oldest gay and lesbian Democratic club in the country, went to court on an emergency basis, got an injunction against the referendum. It was appealed all the way up to D.C.'s highest court, the equivalent of the D.C. Supreme Court, as it were. And D.C.'s highest court said, by 4-3, that's how close it was, 4-3 of the 7 people on D.C.'s highest court said, we can't have a vote on marriage equality because the D.C. Charter says you can't vote on civil rights. And it was done. And in March, I think, 2010, maybe it was April, gay couples starting to get married, lesbian couples starting to get married. Couldn't get married in Virginia, couldn't get married in Maryland. The entire region, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, the entire South, could come to D.C. because it was only legal in places like the Northeast and Iowa. The closest state would have been, Connecticut at that time. Pretty far drive. So I wasn't just helping the people of D.C. I was helping people in Virginia, helping people in my home. I'm very proud of my work on D.C.'s marriage equality law. And again, we started dominoes falling. If my work as a citizen activist got people thinking about marriage equality, got gay couples in the news, got Valentine's Day to be remembered as a day when not everyone in love could be happy, my work in D.C. showed that it wasn't just courts. It was the legislatures who could give us marriage equality. Not always, only in liberal areas. But we were moving the ball forward. So then, of course, the rest of the story you probably know. State after state started going forward. Maryland across the river and New York. And state after state started voting for marriage equality. And then finally, it came up before the United States Supreme Court. And David Boies and Ted Olson, the two who had opposed each other, the two primo lawyers that opposed each other in Bush v. Gore, finally came together to take case to the United States Supreme Court. What's interesting about it is there's a book written about the marriage movement that begins around the time David Boies and Ted Olson took the case. And all due credit to Boies and Olson for winning the case that ended up striking the Defense of Marriage Act. I'll tell you a little bit about that after the break. So good for them for doing that. But a book that begins in 2010, 2011, about the marriage equality movement, ignored the decades of work that went on before then. I'm proud to say there's going to be another book coming out. Its title right now, I think, is going to be Defining Marriage. And I'll bring the author on the show when it comes out that tells about these early stories. And they got a nice chapter on me. He expects that to be published in July. I'll give you more information when that happens. But I'm going to move on to the Supreme Court decisions and how they affected this debate when I come back. If you want to call in, toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let me know what you think about all this. Is it amazing how far we've come? Are you surprised it took so long? This is Mark Levine. Let me know right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine giving the history of the marriage equality movement. What happened Friday was no accident. It was a long time coming. Last couple cases, the ones that really ended this, of course, there was Obergefell on Friday. The one before that, though, was a very important step, and that was the Windsor case. I described yesterday how, under President Clinton, the Republicans in Congress passed the Defense of Marriage Act. Clinton felt he had to sign it in order to get reelected in 1996, and maybe he did. Times were different then. But the Defense of Marriage Act basically said that even if a state had marriage, federal government wasn't required to recognize it. In other words, you could be married in New Hampshire or Massachusetts or Iowa or Connecticut or California, but federal government could just ignore it. I've long felt that was unconstitutional. Federal government has recognized state marriages in every other context for centuries. How could they not recognize marriages between gay couples? That'd be a violation of equal protection. Not that every state had to offer it, that's a different question of equal protection, but just that federal government had to recognize it. That was the case that Boies and Olson brought. That was the Windsor case. Edith Windsor had her longtime wife die, and she had to pay estate taxes when, if you die and you're part of a straight couple, you don't. No matter how many millions you have, if husband dies, wife gets the money. If wife dies, husband gets the money, no taxes. That's our law. Whether you agree with it or not, that's our law. But the federal government was saying, nope, straight couples, they get it tax-free. Gay couples, nope, even if you're lawfully married in Connecticut and Edith Windsor was, you got to pay more taxes because you're gay. They took it up, won the case. 5-4 decision with Anthony Kennedy, Justice Kennedy, joining with the four liberal justices, just as happened on Friday. Friday, of course, was the culmination of it all. Friday was a very sympathetic plaintiff by the name of, his last name was Obergefell. I forgot his first name. Jim, was it? Anyway, Mr. Obergefell had his partner who was dying. And let me get his name. James. Oh, yeah, that's right. Jim. Okay. James Obergefell was the survivor. And this wasn't about money. He wanted to have his name on his partner's death certificate as his husband. That was important to him. They'd been together a very long time. And he lived in Ohio where they didn't have marriage equality. And he wanted to be able to put, to at least give that. He and his partner had been married, not legally married, not civilly married, but married in a religious ceremony. And that was very important to him. They actually, as I recall, even flew to another jurisdiction and got married in the plane on the ground because his husband was so sick, so they could get married before they died. He had ALS. And so they flew to Maryland, got married, I believe, in a plane. Anyway, this story, this very heartfelt story, and a number of other gay and lesbian couples, including those with children, went up to the Supreme Court, and we all know the result. 5-4, Justice Kennedy, Justice Ginsburg, Justice Sotomayor, Justice Breyer, and Justice Kagan agreed that you cannot discriminate under the law between straight couples and gay couples. Everyone has the right to equal protection under the law. That was the celebration that rocked the world and certainly everyone in the United States on Friday. What's amazing to me now is that we've won this big battle, and by the way, the battles aren't over. You could still legally in the United States of America, an employer could fire all his or her gay and lesbian employees. You can still say, oh, you're gay, you're fired. Legally. You can't do it if someone's black. You can't do it if someone is a different religion from you. Civil Rights Act protects you from that. Civil Rights Act passed in 1964 does not include gay and lesbian people. And it should. And that's, we've got to pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Interestingly, that same act to allow gay and lesbian people not to be fired just for being gay or lesbian was proposed on the same day as the Defense of Marriage Act and lost 50-49 back in 1996. Republicans are holding it up, which means that Republicans, majority of them, believe that you should be able to be fired just because you're gay or lesbian. If you have a Republican representative, ask them why you believe that should be. Not even if you're religious. You can just be like, I hate gay people. Oh, you're gay, you're fired. Oh, you're an exemplary employee, too bad, you're fired. That's still legal in America. So we got a few battles yet to go. Nonetheless, Friday was an incredible milestone. No question about it. An incredible milestone. Now, some conservatives are playing the victim. They're saying, but wait a minute. Wait, what if we want to discriminate and we're not allowed to? Aren't we a victim here? Just in the few short minutes we have left, I want to play this exchange between Sean Hannity. I was on his show yesterday, so this was actually the back end of the show. You can listen to it if you go to my website, marklevinetalk.com, and listen after I'm finished talking. He's talking with a very conservative lesbian woman, interestingly enough. Listen a little bit to their conversation.
I guess that's what I'm driving at. You don't have a problem that their religious views view a gay and lesbian lifestyle as sinful. You, in other words, you respect the fact that you disagree, but you respect right. The fact that that's their religion. That's fine. Just leave me alone.
Right. And the thing is I still consider myself Mormon. Obviously, I'm not the best Mormon, but I still have that. And I'm Christian first and foremost. And that's why I think, you know, with the whole wedding cake and everything, I would rather someone be upfront and say, that's against my religion, than me force them to do something because I am so religious that I would hate for someone to go against. And I think if
and you don't, wait, this is an important point. So you wouldn't want to force somebody to go against their religious views?
No,
because in other words,
that would hurt.
Yeah, I think you're showing tolerance that a lot of people, yeah. For example, I've always felt the gay community has looked for tolerance. And I think, you know, but on the other hand, I think there are some activists that want to close churches down.
Some activists that want to close churches down? Well, what are their names, Sean? Who are these gay activists that want to close churches down? I've never heard of it, and I've been a gay activist for 20 years. No, we don't want to close churches down. It is true that within various religious communities, people are working within their religious faith to reform the religious faith. No one, I don't know a single gay activist in the country, and certainly no one with any power, that wants to use the power of the state to close down churches. Are you kidding me? I don't think anyone's even proposed it. You'll have to find me some lunatic who has. But working within our religious traditions, you betcha. One of the things I worked very hard in within my own Jewish tradition was to get conservative Judaism to marry gay couples within the Jewish faith. Reform had done it. Reconstructionist Jews had done it. The Orthodox were the least likely to. They still separate men and women in the synagogue. They still keep kosher. But the conservative was the middle group. It was the group I was raised in. And so I held a panel, and at my panel, the very first conservative rabbi, Jewish rabbi in the country, conservative doesn't mean conservative and liberal the way we think about it. I want to be clear. It's a denomination of Judaism. Anyway, the very first conservative Jewish rabbi in the country agreed that he would marry gay couples, Elliot Dorf. Thank you, Rabbi Elliot Dorf, for making your statement at my forum in 1997, I think it was. These steps, any progressive steps, and I want to, it's not just marriage equality, it's not just gay rights. Any progressive goal that you believe in takes time, takes effort. It takes effort inside the legislature and outside the legislature. You have to do protests. You have to go into churches. You have to talk to people back and forth. You have to not give up when you're set back. You have to recognize who your allies are and who your enemies are, and don't be surprised if some of your allies become your enemies. But with dedication and effort, almost any progressive goal can be reached. You can do it. This is Mark Levine.